ACEC is excited to announce that registration is now open for its fall conference taking place in Marco Island, Florida, this October. That's right, after a year of Zoom and virtual meetings, we're excited to be bringing our fall conference back as an in-person event. And we can't tell you how excited we are to look forward to seeing you there in person for all of the content, networking, and education that the fall conference is known for. Log on to www.acec.org for more information. We can't wait to see you there. Hello and welcome to Engineering Influence, a podcast from the American Council of Engineering Companies. Today, we are honored to be joined by a longtime friend of ACEC and the engineering industry, and a strong advocate for America's infrastructure, House Transportation and Infrastructure Chairman Peter DeFazio, who's represented Oregon's 4th Congressional District since 1987. Chairman DeFazio is a powerful advocate for transformative federal infrastructure investment and consequential action on climate change. He drafted the Invest in America Act, which passed the House in early July and became the vehicle for the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, which cleared the Senate last week. With passage of that bill, the issue of infrastructure once again squarely lands in the House, which is expected to return from the August district work period later this month to address it, as well as a budget reconciliation bill. I'm also joined and pleased to be joined by our CEO, Linda Bauer-Darr, for today's conversation. I want to thank you both for taking time to join the podcast today. And with those introductions out of the way, I want to throw it over to Linda for the conversation.
Great. Thanks for doing this, Jeff. And thank you, Chairman DeFazio, for being with us. When we were getting started, you mentioned that you just adopted a dog, a Labrador. So what's the dog's name?
Liddy. Well, she's now learning her name. She came from a pound in Texas, so, but her name, they named her Liddy, and we've stuck with it. So.
And you're sticking with it. So how old is she?
A year and a half. The story was that she had pups and was in the kennel, or the pound with pups. The pups got adopted. She didn't, but
they
put her on a transport, and she came to Oregon, and we got her. So a lot of dogs, a lot of dogs in Texas that are apparently neglected.
So. Well, you have you've joined a long line of people who have adopted pets during COVID. I think I'm down one pet during COVID, so I think I'm probably on the other side of that fence. But anyway, congratulations, yeah. And I'm sure you will have a great time with Liddy. So we'll go ahead and get started. So you were able to secure passage, obviously, of the Invest Act in the House. By the way, great job. I know that was a Herculean effort. No doubt that had an impact in showing people that the bipartisan package was on its way and that it was going to make it through the Senate. What stands out to you as the most important provision that you secured in the bill? Or what would you be most proud of?
Well, first, that we went through a real legislative process. We were in committee for a total, I think, of close to 60 hours over the 2 years, hundreds of amendments in committee, hundreds of amendments on the floor, an actual legislative process. Yeah, I didn't get a lot of Republican support in the end, but quite a number of their amendments were included in the bill. In contrast, the Senate bill, written behind closed doors, principally by people who don't even serve on the committees of jurisdiction in the Senate. So, you know, my bill was transformative. It was really to take the country beyond Eisenhower 8.0 and into the 21st century for transportation policy, dealing with climate change, resilience, social equity, and creating one whole hell of a lot of jobs. Unfortunately, their bill is Eisenhower 8.0 for the most part, with a little green dressing on the side. I've actually totaled it up, and there's more subsidies. There's more money spent on subsidies for fossil fuels in their bill than on alternative fuels when you add it up properly. You know, they say 25% of the zero-emission bus policy has to be spent on polluting buses. Half of the $18 billion for fossil fuel reduction can be transferred to highways. You know, there's a number of provisions like that in their bill that you know, we are going to, and they, you know, their bill is slightly bigger on highways than mine, way less on rail and transit, and way less on social equity, way less on wastewater, drinking water and lead pipes, which come out of Frank Pallone's committee, all those things. So we're going to try and deal with those deficiencies in reconciliation, which is in part why we're pairing the two. I mean, reconciliation is going to contain a lot of the Democratic agenda, but you know, I'm unwilling at this point to pass this bill without some you know, some changes. It's been made clear that the cabal who wrote it, you know, are not interested in going through regular order, having a conference. In fact, the chairs of the committees of jurisdiction in the Senate were not consulted during the drafting of this bill, which is an absolute insult to them, to the legislative process, and to the House of Representatives. And it's not how you get the best legislation when a group of people write something behind closed doors. So we're going to try and do our best to fix it.
Yeah. So I will applaud you on regular order. I think that's something that people that have, you know, been in Washington for a long time have been very eager to get us back into that good rhythm. And, you know, even if neither the Senate or the House have the perfect bill, the fact that we're exercising those muscles again, I think, is hopeful. So you talked a little bit about reconciliation and, you know, how you're going to marry these things. So can you talk a little bit more about that and that strategy and how you think that's going to work?
Well, the, you know, reconciliation is going to go through, at least in the House, a committee process. I would assume it will in the Senate. It came out of the Budget Committee. And in the House, we'll pass the budget, and then the committees of jurisdiction will be given their apportionments, and we'll work through a legislative process, committee by committee, to put together a bill by mid-September. I think the deadline for us to have legislated our, you know, our parts is the 15th of September. I'm going to mark up on the 12th of September in my committee. And, you know, I'm dealing with the White House on how we are, you know, since there have been some vague pledges that I'm not quite sure of from the president saying no more money for things that are in this bill. But I didn't make that agreement. And B, you know, I think there's ways to work around that. It can be just a little bit different. But I'm working to add back money to transit. You know, we got $100 billion just to bring it up to a state of good repair, let alone to provide new options for people. My bill critically included frequency, which would really help with ridership. Their bill has it has no decent policy in it. They don't understand transportation. Then rail, you know, yeah, Amtrak's doing pretty well, but high speed rail didn't. And I very much hope to come up with a different and novel high-speed rail category. Then social equity, again, underfunded in the Senate bill. Didn't include my sidebars for affordable housing and to prevent gentrification, which has happened in a couple of cases where we've removed freeways. You know, great, we've just rejoined a community that's been split asunder. And now they're all being driven out. So I'm not sure how we can deal with that under the dead guy rule, so-called reconciliation, the bird rule. But we're going to try and deal with that. Wastewater, you know, it's a tiny fraction of the investment we need and way less than I had in my bill. I'm hoping to increase wastewater. I'm hoping also to figure out how to bring back in green infrastructure for wastewater, which has tremendous promise in addition to methane capture and electricity generation. And then certainly, again, I partnered with Frank Pallone on this, the drinking water and the lead pipe removal, again, way underfunded. Again, hopefully we can deal with those things. And then the EV charging is very lacking also. And they didn't include park and rides. I mean, seriously, I mean, I know that truck stops were fighting viciously against including rest areas, but I didn't know anybody who was against EV charging at park and rides unless you're trying to tell people not to take transit. I don't get that one. That might be a Toomey amendment since he hates transit. I don't know.
You know, you did talk about, you said, you know, high speed rail didn't get what you felt it deserved. And then, of course, Amtrak did pretty well. I imagine that had to be part of the, you know, one of the president's, you know, this is the deal and you're going to have to accept it. I imagine that that was a huge priority for him and probably also, you know, something that ultimately was pushed by Senator Carper. You know, obviously a long-term friendship there that was helpful.
Senator Carper didn't have a voice in writing this bill. None. I talked to him. None. He had none. They did not consult the chairs of the committees of jurisdiction. It was written by the likes of Sinema and Portman and Collins and a cabal of other people and Manchin, who got his $8 billion for blue hydrogen hubs, which, by the way, if you read the New York Times 3 days ago, I've known this for a long time, so-called blue hydrogen is more polluting than CNG. And so, I mean, there are a lot of elements in that bill that are parochial and not dealing with climate change and not dealing with the investments we need to make.
So how does this all get worked out? You know, this is, you know, you put a lot of time and effort into your bill. It goes over to the Senate. The Senate has negotiated, or, you know, some of the leaders in the Senate had negotiated with the president. We've got it through the Senate. Now we have to come back together. How does this play out ultimately? And how can you have a voice in this process?
Well, we are going to have a voice in the process because reconciliation originates in the United States House of Representatives. So we are intending both for the Build Back Better agenda, the things the president wants to do for families, for childcare, so more women can get into the workforce, all those things, in addition to what we can do to at least mitigate some of the shortcomings of the Senate infrastructure bill, which is why we are pairing the two together. If we moved this infrastructure bill tomorrow, first off, it doesn't go into effect till October 1st, so what's the rush? And secondly, I predict that then we wouldn't even get a reconciliation bill. It's very likely that that wouldn't happen. So, you know, often around here, the next thing doesn't happen. I remember when I voted against Obama's Recovery Act because they had dramatically reduced real investment in jobs, investment in infrastructure, school construction and other things for tax cuts too small to notice because that jerk Larry Summers. And I tried to get Jim Oberstar to vote the whole committee against it. And I said, Jim, we gotta fix this. And he said, no, they promised me the next thing would be a big infrastructure bill, which then Obama killed. And, you know, so next thing never happens around here. And that's my opinion on reconciliation. If we were just to blithely pass without, you know, addressing some of these concerns in the infrastructure bill, we would never see reconciliation. Yeah.
So, you know, you talked a lot about sustainability and climate and those issues that are very important. And frankly, that engineering plays an enormous role in, as well as equity. You've been vocal about these things. What are the other differences that you see in the Senate bill that stand out to you as red flags?
Well, I mean, again, the fact that there is more investment in promoting fossil fuels, requiring one quarter of the zero emission buses be fossil fuel buses, allowing the transfer of half the funds into highways, no fix at first provisions, not to make states look at, wait a minute, are more lanes the best way to go? And I use, and Senator Kaine tried to do this as an amendment in the Senate, because Virginia's the poster child for this. Republicans were charged. They said, oh, more lanes on 95. It's backed up all the time. But the projections were in 10 years with two more lanes, one each way, it would be just as congested as it is today with induced demand and no alternatives at a cost of $10 to $12 billion. And they instead are coming up with an innovative rail project, working with CSX, new right-of-way, new bridge over the Potomac River for rail. The other one's at 99% of capacity. CSX likes it, and they're going to run fast trains, not high-speed trains, but fast trains down to Richmond from D.C. at half the cost, reducing all that pollution, and they have great projections on how much it'll reduce congestion. I was doing a press conference with the mayor of Richmond. He said, well, you know, we never really wanted to be a bedroom community in D.C., but, you know, housing is way less expensive down here. Things like that were left out, they're going to be hard to fix. But the other thing is that Secretary Buttigieg, under this bill, is going to have $100 billion of discretionary grants. And I'm working with the White House on how we're going to mitigate some of the boneheadedness in the Senate bill through that $100 billion of discretionary spending.
Yeah. You know, that brings to mind, I know, you know, years ago when I was at the Department of Transportation, they were talking about a talent drain and, you know, how so many people were leaving government. And the last administration obviously, you know, made an effort to reduce the size of government. How are we prepared in the Department of Transportation to take this money and run with it, considering a lot of it is going to be discretionary and there's going to be a process that needs to be taken on?
Well, you know, I'm hopeful that DOT will act with unusual dispatch, and hopefully this won't require a lot of laborious rulemaking. I'm not certain. I'm not totally conversant with the details of the discretionary money yet. I don't know, but we will certainly look at ways to expedite it. If DOT needs, you know, more staff to deal with these things, or people with different talents, I'd be happy to look at dealing with that either in reconciliation or in appropriations. I'm already looking at that with the FAA. They lack inspectors both to deal with air rage and with ongoing problems with the industry and the manufacturers. So if other parts of DOT, you know, have been hollowed out, I wasn't aware DOT got as hollowed out as State Department or a whole bunch of other agencies that Trump decimated. But, you know, I will ask on next conversation with the secretary what he needs.
Well, it'd be interesting after all this effort, you know, if we ran into that bureaucracy when the money is, you know, finally flowing towards projects that we are all excited to get started on. So, you know, I just want to, this one's not a question. It's really more a word of thanks. You know, the engineering industry is facing a challenge among firms that took these PPP loans to save jobs and are now being being told that they have to give those forgiven loans back because of this quirk in the federal acquisition regulation. And you and your great staff on the T&I committee were very helpful in getting language attached to the INVEST Act to lessen the impact of the problem. It didn't make it through in the Senate. And, you know, we at one point were making great progress with Senator Braun and some others who had actually even expanded on the work that you did. And we were excited about that. Ultimately, it got held up by the process, really. You know, a lot of the amendments that had good support behind them fell out, but particularly by Rand Paul. So he was kind of the party killer, and we were very close to getting it done. So, you know, if it comes back to the House, I hope that we're going to be able to count on your support. And I just, you know, we've talked about this issue before. It really is unfair. We've got people in the, you know, contractors and everyone else that contracts with the government is being treated differently than the engineering industry. We're being pulled out and told that, you know, this money that you were given as basically a grant, well, everybody else doesn't have to give it back, but we're going to take it out of your hides going forward in future projects. So in some cases, you're not going to be paid for the work that you're doing. And it just, to me, is just insane. And, you know, we're hoping very much that we're going to be able to get this taken care of. And we do hope that, you know, that'll be something that's important to you as well, sir.
No, it's important. It's outrageous. You know, I was not a big fan of the PPP program. You know, the restrictions that were put on people. This is one glaring example. You know, the fraud that occurred through that program. I mean, the thing I did for aviation, the payroll support program, had zero fraud and no questions. I know the fix I did in the House wasn't everything you wanted. Unfortunately, I don't have complete jurisdiction. I had to deal with two other committees who objected. You know, I didn't know how close you'd come in the Senate. And it's sad that, you know, that's a body where one person can stop something that has, I think, extraordinary merit. And we'll continue to work on it, continue to work with, you know, the green eye shade people, DOT, and see what we can do in the House. I mean, we're very bound by the dead guy rule, the so-called Byrd rule, the reconciliation rules. You know, but we'll see what we can do. Policy is tough under his rules, but it, you know, it's pretty absurd that, you know, we're held up by a rule written, I think, now 12 years ago by, you know, by a senator dead 12 years, written 28 years ago. It makes no sense to me. And the Senate does have discretion, which they seem loath to use, to just have the chair rule things in order. And then it takes 60 votes to overrule the chair, which turns the filibuster on its head. And ultimately, in a good reconciliation bill, if the parliamentarian in a seance with Robert Byrd is saying you can't do these things, I'm hopeful that the Senate leadership will have the guts to do that, put Harris in the chair, have her rule it in order, and then the Republicans are going to have to get 60 votes to overturn her ruling, and they can just go forward with the bill with right. 50 votes.
Right. Well, we will be in there pitching, and, you know, we'll do everything that we can to try to make sure that people have the information they need to make a decision. But absolutely appreciate, again, your support, and hope as that we can continue to count on it, which it sounds like we can. It's just the process, and anything can happen with the process. So let's work towards that. So let's assume and hope that we're successful. We get this major infrastructure package to the president's desk this year. Then what? So what's, other than a vacation, clearly, what's next on your list of committee priorities? I mean, what else is up?
Well, we've already started working on the Water Resources Development Act, which we try and do every 2 years. And this time, not to use the round the barn indirect way of you know, funding individual projects. I intend to go through a similar process to that I went forward with, which is, you know, was very rigorous and scandal free on member directed spending in the service bill, which, by the way, I haven't given up on yet. We have some ideas of reconciliation, although individually we can't do projects. We have some ideas. And then, you know, some water resources, Coast Guard authorization, reforms at the Federal Emergency Management Agency. I'm hoping in reconciliation to create a new pre-development program substantially funded at the Economic Development Administration, which could help a lot of the smaller communities who don't even know how to begin to try and access federal grants for wastewater, drinking water, housing, or any other thing that relates to economic development. So that's also something that they'll be working on, plus all the usual burdens of oversight and trying to get the money out the door. I mean, this bill will go into effect October 1st. You know, we want to have a really robust construction season next year.
We're with you on hoping for that. You know, you just, I know you don't have a lot more time, but you did, reference member directed projects, which to me is code for earmark. Is that right?
Yeah, except earmarks. Technically, an earmark is something the Appropriations Committee does that isn't authorized. We always did designated spending in service transportation bills in the House. They always went through a legislative process. In the Senate, not so much. Things got airdropped in. We went through a rigorous process. 109 Republicans and almost all the Democrats had projects up to $20 million. They had to work with their local governments, with their states. There's a lot of really good projects in there that the state bureaucracy or the federal bureaucracy is never going to get to in people's districts. It was like 1% of the bill. I'm still working on that because I think it has a lot of merit. There's some ways, I'm not going to go into details, but we have a couple ideas to get around the dead guy rule.
You know, you and I had talked about this over a year ago, but I'm with you on the need to give the members some ownership of these projects, give them something to bring back to their communities, because frankly, they're there to represent their communities and make the case for their communities when infrastructure projects are required. And it just seems to me like this is a even bigger issue than what we're working on with infrastructure. It's just the ability for Congress to collaborate and compromise, you know, the opportunity to reach across the aisle and say, you know, I want to help you on this priority. Will you help me on this? And, or I can do this, you know, it's doing business. And it seems like when we were deprived of that, regular order came to a halt, the wheels of Congress grinded to the halt, and there was less bipartisanship as a result. So I think you feel passionately about that. I know we all at ACEC feel very passionately about that. I think it's important going forward. We thank you for recognizing that. And before we wrap, I am curious, how did you go about vetting those member requests? I mean, that's got to be a difficult job, right?
It just about killed the staff. We hired some additional staff. I mean, first we had to get a vendor to create a software program. They were all had to be submitted online, posted online. All their documentation showing local support, affidavits of no pecuniary interest. All of those things, the things that in the past led to scandals. And plus, obviously, I created, equity. I got $20 million and the newest freshman got $20 million. You can do a lot. I spread it around between wastewater that'll help a small port in my district attract a fish processor. Worked with the port of Coos Bay on rail sidings that will enhance the port activity and get more product on truck on rail instead of truck. I had a number of projects that. Electric buses, multimodal facilities. There were a lot of things that people are liked. I mean, a quick story. When the whole earmark thing blew up back after 06, and the Tea Party came in and they got this bad name, Republicans banned them, I was down in one of my second most conservative county. Most of my counties are red, except for two. And guy stood up and goes, "Oh, those earmarks, they're horrible. And I said, "Yeah, sir, I know there's been some issues." I said, "Hey, what do you think about the Weaver Road Bridge, which is a bridge over the freeway that opened up an industrial park?" And he's, "Oh, wow, that's great. Weaver Road Bridge, that's great." I said, "Sir, that was an earmark." He said, "Oh, well, that wasn't bad." And I said, "Yeah, no, the state wasn't going to do it. The county couldn't afford it." I got it done. So when people, I did a lot of them in my years on the committee, and there's never been a scandal. I mean, I had some people object to joining North Bend and Coos Bay with a bike path. And it's like, tourism is a really important part of
it. You know,
the
very great example there. And, you know, who knows better but than your constituents, you know, what the needs are and who is better positioned to deliver for them than you. But you have to have that opportunity. And, you know, the reason for us having this federal program is because it all needs to tie together ultimately, right? It's like, you know, kind of like the, you know, the circulatory system of the body, right? And at the center of it maybe is the federal government, but then the state portions and the local portions go out from there. And, they need to be right on, and we need to make sure that the blood is flowing between the heart and, you know, the end of the system, right? And make sure that all the communities are weighing in, and earmarks are a way for us to do that. So we agree with you. It's good for the nation, and I think it's good for government, and it's good for your constituents ultimately. So again, you know, thanks for being bold and going forward with that, because I don't think without your push on that, that, you know, that would have kind of entered into the frame again. So again, thank you for that.
Okay. Well, thank you. Enjoyed the interview. Liddy has, I've done three Zooms in a row. She needs a break. So.
Mr. Chairman, I do appreciate it. And thank you for your time today. Good luck in the legislative session ahead. We appreciate your strong voice for the built environment and for infrastructure, and we do appreciate for everything that you do, and Linda, thank you very much for joining us today on the program.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Linda. Appreciate it. Hi to everybody who listens to this.
Great.
Okay. Bye-bye.
And again, this has been Engineering Influence, a podcast from the American Council of Engineering Companies. We will see you next time.